Hello and welcome back to the Palace Way podcast, where for once we are basically as happy as we can get. I don't think there's anything negative that we have to say about that performance. Today we are joined by the wonderful journalist of New Shopper and previously the Palace Way, Bobby Manzi. Bobby, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Absolutely brilliant. I mean, I don't think there's any way we could not be. I'm almost speechless, to be honest. Thinking of what to say in the intro was tough enough just because we put on an absolute show in Brighton and Hove Albion's backyard. And, you know, having been a Palace fan for coming up to about 8 years, maybe nearly 9 years now, I've only seen us beat Brighton maybe three times. We haven't beaten them since I met my girlfriend 2.5 years ago. So, yeah, it's basically a foreign feeling to be victorious at the Amex. And it was just the best afternoon. It was just the best afternoon. I mean, Bobby, you were there, so give us the review from the press box.
Yeah, so obviously I was sat in and among the Brighton fans in the upper tier press box. And it was just great seeing them rip their hairs out over every single wrong move. I mean, Palace struggled in the first 20 minutes, I would say, and then grew into the game. They kind of worked Brighton out and realised there was no reason to be scared. They started to grow in confidence. And I mean, that goal was just the turning point. From that moment on, I think Palace largely controlled proceedings. They found a second goal quickly after. Then Brighton showed no signs, really, towards the end of the first half of getting back into it. As you would expect, they come out for the second half, up for it, trying to turn it around. Hurts have changed a few things, obviously give a motivational team talk, and they looked like they could find a way back into the game. But then Palace found a way to counter. They had the goal disallowed. And then finally again, Palace added that third, and it was just pretty comfortable from that moment on. Yes, Brighton had chances. Yes, they scored, which was a bit fluky. But overall, I think it was a really complete performance from Palace. Nowhere near their best performance of the season. I thought there had been better performances than that. But it was really, really good. And I just think that game is now the moment where Palace hit their level. They start to progress because they've got the confidence. They've got a couple of wins under their belts now. They've had good results. Just the one loss in nine. And it really feels like things are starting to turn around and they can get back to the form they found at the end of last season. Obviously, they still have Elise missing, so there will be times where they don't take chances or don't create as many chances as they should. But Palace look a much more complete unit now, and it's really good to see.
Yeah, I think all the partnerships are finally starting to click. I spoke a lot about Trevor Chalobah on Twitter yesterday, who for me was one of the best players, maybe even my man of the match for the game, because he now looks like a natural fit on the right-hand side of that defence. Lacroix is obviously just incredible, and Mark Gahey is Mark Gahey on the left-hand side. So that back three is fantastic. And something that's kind of also emerged is that our wing-backs are finally working this season. Munoz has taken a while to get into it. Tyrick Mitchell's not been in his best form, but his cross for the second goal was...
I'm probably Tyrick Mitchell's biggest critic in terms of his end product, his delivery. But my word, that was probably the best cross I've seen this season for the second goal. He just put it on a plate for Sarr. Sarr's run was excellently timed. It brilliantly read the ball. But that goal was all about Tyrick Mitchell and that ball because it was just a remarkable delivery.
And you've mentioned Ismaila Sarr there, who obviously won the club's match, man of the match, and scored two goals, got an assist. From a tactical setup point of view, seeing him score goals, you know, with his head, with his foot from a central position, and yet also being influential as a runner more out wide, is pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, I've been banging on in the press box for the last couple of weeks. I said Palace would beat City 1-0. Obviously, it was a 2-2 draw, but tactically, the game went exactly as I expected, that they would play their high line. Palace would be able to use the pace of Sarr, the strength of Mateta to try and get in behind. Obviously, no Rodri in midfield for them, so they'd be able to win a lot of ball in midfield and play those quick passes out wide. So, and obviously, you've got Daniel Munoz there as well, who's not the slowest. He's got a bit of pace to him. He's got that high energy and he can get in behind. And I thought the Brighton game would go similar to that. I thought Sarr would be able to play off the last man, try and split the centre-halves as he did for the third goal with his pace. Obviously, Lewis Dunk's not very quick, so he could attack him with his speed. So it just the game went exactly as I expected it to. And I said to a Brighton fan on Tuesday last week that if Palace can use Sarr effectively, I can see Palace winning the game quite easily, because not because Brighton are a poor side, but just because they will be able to get at their defence. And it's exactly what happened. Sarr played the role remarkably well. I mean, he was the best player on the pitch. Yes, there's conversations about Chalobah, Lacroix, who was absolutely fantastic, and obviously Dean Henderson, who's produced some great saves. But I just thought Sarr was pivotal, and yes, he scored two goals and got a questionable assist. So obviously he's going to be pivotal to a win. But he was just crucial to everything Palace did. And it's great to see him come into his form. We know there was a player there from what he did at Watford. He didn't really show it at Marseille, but obviously there was other things going on there. But he's just shown what a great talent he is. And his pace, he's probably the quickest player I've ever seen in a Palace shirt. He's really come into his own now, and it's great to see. And they're doing that a bit more. He's starting to show his personality as well. The way he celebrated with the fans at the end of the game, he's quite a quiet character. If you listen, I think it was Ben Foster when he first made the move to Palace. He said quite a shy character, doesn't say much in the dressing room. You just need to make sure he's happy, and then he will give you moments of magic on a Saturday afternoon. And I mean, obviously it was Sunday yesterday, but it's exactly what he did. And I think Oliver Glasner's that man manager who's getting now starting to get the best out of him, and the results are starting to show.
Yeah, and it's coming at a very good time as well, because Eberechiaze, on the way back from injury, still isn't really himself. He hasn't been the Eberechiaze we know and love this season.
Once again, I think everyone's been quite reactionary, and I include myself in this because when results weren't going well, we were all quite harsh. But when you think about it, Palace had a lot of chances this season. Eze had a lot of chances this season. A lot of the time he's created them himself. He's just missed that final bit in front of goal. And I mean, when you've had injuries, when there's a lack of confidence because of poor results, that's going to happen. Yes, he didn't do loads yesterday, but from what it looks like, he was struggling with a bit of an injury on his foot. But he's not been awful this season. He's just not taken his chances. And that's all I need to do. I need to nurture that confidence with him. Eze's very much a player that you have to put your arm around. And I think Gleison's doing that from what we gather. He spoke in his press conference on Friday about he speaks to Eze more than his son. He's got like a real paternal relationship with him. And I do think Eze will start to take these chances, but he's just got to be given a bit of time. He's obviously got the trust of the manager. The fan base maybe needs to stay off him a little bit and just show him that bit of loving, if you like, rather than moaning every time he misses a chance in front of goal. And I think we will start to see the results of Eze.
Yeah, I mean, you've made a good point there about fans kind of staying off the players' back. But also, I want to circle that back to Glasner, who received a lot of criticism, especially earlier this season with his sort of game management and substitutions. But with the way Brighton opened that second half, having brought in Nciso and changed their shape, they were dominating us, right? Like, we could not get out of our own box, let alone our half. And Glasner, yes, through injuries, makes the decision to take off Jean-Philippe Mateta and Eberechiaze, both of whom appear to be fine, and bring on Eddie Nketiah and Daichi Kamada. It was a game-changing substitution from a momentum perspective, and obviously Nketiah ended up getting the assist for Ismaila Sarr's goal. But generally, it was the right players to bring on, would you agree?
Yeah, I think both of the players, and this is testament to their character probably, because they've not had the easiest starts in Palace shirts, were superb when they came on. Yes, Eddie Nketiah had that horrific miss. Yes, he should have scored. But other than that, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that, he overcomplicated the finish, and I do think that's a confidence thing. I know we keep coming back to that word. All he has to do was go low, and he probably would have scored, but he tried to chip the keeper, whatever. But those two, when they came on, they allow Palace to get out. They worked hard. They made Palace's ball retention a lot better. And I just coming back to the assist for Sarr's goal from Nketiah, that long ball that he found a flick on for to play Sarr through to split Lewis Dunk and Van Hecke was absolutely wonderful. I mean, he timed it to perfection. He was pivotal to that goal, and he did really well. Kamada, once again, coming back to him, he ran a lot. He worked hard. He kept the ball, and he just He made it a lot more controlled. I think controlled was the word I was looking for. In attack, Palace were more controlled. They held that ball more when the ball came to midfield. It didn't go back to Brighton straight away. And it just took the pressure off the back line a bit.
Could you argue that's because Kamada was brought on to play in what is seen as his best position, that left-sided 10 in
Yeah,
Glasgow?
I think that's exactly why, really. And I think Kamada has shown slight sparks in the Palace shirt. I think we obviously the goal at Villa away. But he's just not been good enough. And yes, he's played out of position, so I do think that has played a part. But I also think he tries too hard at times. I think he really wants to do well, and he's really trying to prove to the fans that he can do it. And I think it's just making him have more mistakes than he probably should make. Obviously, a stupid red card that he's had. And I do think there's a sense that he probably overtries a bit. But you can't question his work rate, especially on Sunday. And as you say, playing in his right position, he did a really good job.
There was one moment early on after he was brought on where he looked a bit weaker and got dispossessed, but after that moment he was pretty much faultless and played that very good through ball to Eddie Nketiah, only for the former Arsenal man to miss. So let's move on to Eddie. £30 million signing in the summer, someone that we've been chasing for 2, 3 years now, or at least been monitoring in that time. He's certainly not done enough to usurp Jean-Philippe Mateta, but with Mateta's contract uncertainty, Nketiah could be the long-term replacement. He hasn't really been good enough so far in a Palace shirt, has he, Bobby?
No, and I do maintain that I think he was probably the wrong signing for Palace. I thought at the time it looked a decent move because he's a player they've been after for a long time. He'd shown finishing quality at Arsenal, but I'm just not sure he's the right fit for the system. Palace have used him as a 10 quite often, which isn't his role, but when he's played through the middle, he hasn't shown enough. He did really well, as I said, against Brighton, but I've still not seen enough to be convinced by him. And I just think £30 million was a massive overspend. Jean-Philippe Mateta was demanding wages upwards of £100,000 a week in the summer. Eddie Nketiah is on big money. I think that the money would probably have been better spent on giving Mateta a bigger contract, because although he's only scored 4 goals this season, if you look at his XG, it's around 4 as well. So he's actually finishing the chances he's getting. They've just not created enough chances for him. And I think it's a big risk if Palace lose Mateta over the next 2 years, because I do genuinely believe that with Glasner as a coach, Mateta is a top quality striker. And I think they need to do all they can to keep hold of him. So when you take all that into account, I just think it was the wrong move bringing Eddie Nketiah into the club. He hasn't shown enough yet. I wouldn't totally write him off because he's 25. He will get chances. I'm sure he will develop. And I do, once again, we keep coming back to this word, confidence. He's not scored, or he scored against QPR on the cup, but he's not really shown any signs of putting away a chance yet. So when he puts away a chance, I do think we'll start to see a better version of Eddie Nketiah. But I just think money, that level of £30 million investment would have been better spent going for someone like Ryan Shirky, James McCathie, Antonio Nusa, one of those kind of players in the summer, rather than Eddie Nketiah.
And with Mateta's minor injury he picked up before the Brighton game, do you think Nketiah could have a chance of starting on Wednesday against Arsenal in the Cup?
But I don't know, because I haven't managed to ascertain how serious Mateta's problem is. Obviously, we saw that he had his thigh tied up. He looked like he was maybe struggling a little bit just before he came off. So there were signs there. So I think that's going to be one that will develop over the next 24, 48 hours. I'm sure they won't want to take the risk on him ahead of the league. So maybe they will give Eddie Nketiah the start. But maybe they were planning on doing that anyway, because he's obviously come back from injury. He needs minutes in his leg. Palace still see that he's going to be a very important figure for the rest of the season. But look, time will tell. We'll speak to Oliver Glasner tomorrow. I'm not sure when this podcast is going out, but we'll speak to Oliver Glasner on Tuesday. We'll have some quotes from him Tuesday afternoon and once again Tuesday evening. So I'm sure we'll find out more then.
Hopefully, if he does play, he manages to get a first, well, not a first goal in the cup, but a goal that kickstarts his Palace career, basically. I think a goal against
I think a goal against Arsenal, especially if it's a match winner or a pivotal goal in the game, would be very important to his confidence. Obviously, it's his former club as well. Arsenal are, let's not beat around the bush, one of the best sides in the league. And no matter if they rotate or not on Wednesday, it's still going to be a top quality side. So to score against them would be a big confidence booster. And hopefully it can kickstart Eddie Nketiah's career in a Crystal Palace shirt.
Yeah, for sure. Let's just move back to the Brighton game briefly before we move on to Arsenal. We've spoken about Chalobah, Lacroix, Sarr. Who would you say was your man of the match, and why?
Well, as you all know, I'm a bit of a Dean Henderson lover. I think it was, at the time, I thought it was great business because I was aware that they were looking to sell Sam Johnson. They weren't able to sell him as quick as they probably hoped because of various things, injuries to both of them. But I just thought it was a good investment. He was obviously a younger keeper than Johnson. He has shown really good shot saving ability wherever he's been on loan. Even his spell at Man United when he was in the team, when was it David De Gea was injured? He's shown his real capability of being a great goalkeeper, mainly a shot stopper. We know he's got weaknesses with his feet, but quite frankly, if you're a Crystal Palace goalkeeper, I don't mind if you're bad with your feet if you're exceptional with your shot stopping ability. And I thought at Brighton, he made some really pivotal saves. The one where he curled it round the post from the substitute. Oh my God, his name's gone for Nciso's shot. Was very, very good. His save from the corner was very, very good. Maybe a bit questionable for the goal, but I give him the benefit of the doubt there. And I don't think Palace walk away with 3 points if it's not for Dean Henderson, because Brighton would have levelled at a point, or they would have taken the lead at a point. So he was crucial to yesterday's win. But I wouldn't go as far to say he was man of the match, because there were more players important in the team, especially Ismaïla Sarr, who, I mean, 2 goals, absolutely invaluable. Maybe could have had another assist. Bit unlucky there, with the Daniel Munoz goal being disallowed. I thought Munoz had a really good game, actually. I thought, as I'd already mentioned, Lacroix was exceptional. I think Trevor Chalobah has really come into his own. I think maybe people have been a bit reactionary recently, saying he's not worth paying £20 million on a permanent fee. But I think in the last couple of games, he's really started to show his quality, and he's really coming into his own. I think if you notice by his reactions at the end of the game, I think he's a player who gets it. Ultimately, I think he's really invested. I think he's doing the best for the team, and he's only going to get better and better as far as I'm concerned. So I thought he was really good, and maybe could be an investment in the summer. We expect Mark McGee to leave the club, whether that's in January, which Crystal Palace are desperate not to lose him then, or whether that's the summer. So they will be looking for at least one and maybe two centre halves. I see Chalobah as a good option there. So yeah, but in answer to the question, I know it's slightly an elongated way to get it. I just think Sarr's impact, if you take that out of the team, Palace don't win. Henderson's impact, if you take that out of the team, Palace don't win. But I just think providing 2 goals against your biggest rivals, it has to be Ismaïla Sarr.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. You're talking about the defence there. I think continuity is something, especially in defence, that we really need going into next season. We saw what losing Anderson and not integrating Chalobah or Lacroix soon enough did for the start of our season. And losing our captain for the second year, but basically our playing captain for the second year running, will have knock-on effects.
You can't change two of your back three and not expect to have issues at the back. Even though Palace's defence have probably been the best part of the team this season, there's still been time. Huh?
That's mostly Dean Henderson up until maybe the last four games.
That's what I was going to say. There's still been elements where things haven't quite clicked, where things have gone wrong. So now that back three look like there's a relationship formed there, they understand each other's games, they get to each other's strengths and weaknesses. There's a real complete performance of the back three consistently every week. Even when they conceded 2 goals against Manchester City, they were still very good as a unit. So they've been really impressive. I've been super pleased with the way they've started to come together. And I think you're right, continuity is important. My biggest worry isn't actually Palace losing Mark Gay. My biggest worry is that Tottenham might come back in for Maxime Lacroix to try and form a partnership with Van de Ven, like was at Wolfsburg. Obviously, Tottenham mainly play two centre halves, but sometimes opt to play three, and a back three of Romero, Lacroix, and Van de Ven would provide them a lot more strength at the back, which has obviously been a big problem for them this season. They've shipped a lot of goals where they shouldn't really been conceding. So this isn't from something that I've heard that Tottenham are coming in for him, but it's more that you could see that kind of unfolding, and you don't want to be in a situation where you could potentially lose Lacroix and Gueye so quickly. But I do think buying Trevor Chalobah in the summer, as long as he keeps this level of performance up that he showed against Brighton, could be a good idea to give that continuity at the back. So then you only lose one centre half next summer, not two. There's also Chally Riad, don't forget. Really promising young defender. In the games that he has played, I think he's made a couple of mistakes, but you expect that from a 21-year-old coming into the Premier League. But he's shown real potential. He's a defender that Oliver Glasner really rates. So Palace are in a good position in that aspect, but they've just got to get their recruitment right should they lose Mark Gay in the summer.
And how much would you pay for Trevor Chalobah in the summer?
I think Trevor, as I said already, is really coming into his own in the Palace shirt, and should he keep that level of performance up, maybe around the 20, £25 million mark. Obviously, he's got a long-term contract at Chelsea. Yes, Enzo Maresca isn't really interested in having him in the side, it seems. But Chelsea are obviously going to demand big money for a youth product who's English, who has pure profit on him. So yeah, you think around the 20, £25 million mark. As I say, as long as he can keep to the level he showed on Sunday, I do think that could be a good investment.
And in the case that Mark Gay does leave, do you think Chaddy Riyad is the like-for-like replacement, or do you think we'd look to sign someone else ahead of him?
Well, they would definitely look to sign someone else because there wouldn't be enough depth at centre half. But I just think it allows you to be a bit more creative with your solutions. You could go for either a more experienced player because Chally Riad is that youthful aspect, or you could sign another Chally Riad or another Chris Richards who have got ceiling to develop and will add to the team in the future. Because like Chris Richards had to wait a long time to get his chance. But when he came in, he did really well, and he kind of made that position his own. But Palace did good business in defence in the summer. He's struggled with injuries, and all of a sudden he was surplus to requirements.
In the case of replacing Mark Gahey, you need someone who you don't necessarily need like to replace his leadership attributes. We've got players who I think could step up in his absence, namely Maxence Lacroix, we've spoken about in the past, having really good sort of leadership tendencies.
I think Lacroix is at Palace long enough. I think he's already shown the capability to be a Palace captain. I think he's a leader on the pitch. He's a leader off the pitch. He's done. This is always a funny point to make, but I do think it tracks. He's always put his hands up to do the post-match interviews, win, lose, or draw. And I think that's a good thing to have in the dressing room, someone who's willing to talk no matter what's happened. And yeah, I just think he's a really good character, and a great professional. And he's only going to get better and better. So I do think he's got the capabilities to be a future Palace captain. And that would replace Mark Gay's leadership capabilities, because ultimately I think Mark Gay's a future England captain.
Yeah. But I guess with Mark, the thing that kind of goes underrated, because I was watching back the game yesterday, he is just a ridiculous centre back when it comes to dribbling, ball control, intelligence, and passing. On the ball, he is, I'd say, world class for a centre back, because there are numerous occasions where he's put under pressure and he just spins away and clips a perfect ball up to Mateta.
Yeah, he's calm, composed, knows exactly what he's doing defensively and offensively, and he's just got so much confidence. He leads by example, and like I said already, for me, he's a future England captain, and he every single week he shows why he's Palace captain.
I'll move on to a question that's been bothering me for a while. Now that we've got Adam Wharton and Cheick Doucouré re-emerging after lengthy periods out with injury, and in light of the good form of Jefferson Lerma and Will Hughes, and of course the emerging talent of Justin Devenny, what is our best midfield, and what should it be, sort of looking ahead to the next couple of weeks?
I think Will Hughes has kind of made himself indispensable, to be honest. Even with all these players back, and maybe they're more glamorous players than him, I just think the role that he does in that team is brilliant. I think he has been probably Palace's unsung hero this season. He works hard. Defensively, he's solid. I mean, not many players get past him. Wherever the ball is, he's there. His passing has been excellent. Look at the ball he played for the goal against Manchester City. Was just remarkable. I just think you can't drop him. The manager has given him every bit of faith he can want, and Will Hughes has repaid that in abundance. So naturally, Will Hughes has to remain in the team. Now, Adam Wharton is probably one of the best young midfielders in the division. So I don't see really how you can drop him. I think Jefferson Lerma has been excellent. I think Doucouré needs to get up to match fitness. I just think he looks a bit slow. He doesn't look ready. He looks a shadow of the player he once was, but that's expected when you've been out for over a year. So for me, I think my midfielders maybe Hughes and Wharton as the best two at the minute.
Was the two that led us to a very nice winning streak at the end of last season, of course.
And I think Glasner has a lot of faith in that duo. I think he's desperate to get Wharton back because what he offers on the ball is second to none. I mean, he just can be in a tight space and he'll find a pass from anywhere. So, and that's an exceptional quality to have. So yeah, for me, at the moment, it has to be Hughes and Wharton unless Hughes starts to show otherwise, and then Lerma comes in there.
And with Arsenal in mind, do you think, due to the aggravation that Wharton suffered that kept him out of the squad this weekend, we won't see him start on Wednesday and instead it could be Hughes and Doucouré?
Well, I don't think he's going to start his first game back anyway, whenever that comes, whether that's Arsenal Wednesday, Arsenal Sunday, or Boxing Day. Whenever his first game comes back from injury, I don't see him coming straight into the 11. So I think it will be like a 20 minutes against in his first game back, and then it will be more like a 45 minutes, and then maybe a full start after that. Because he's got Rooney's place as well, because Lerma, as well as Hughes, haven't really done anything to be kicked out of the starting 11. So he's got to come on as a star, show his quality, get back to match sharpness, and then those starts will come.
But as for our midfield on Wednesday's game, would you expect Doucouré comes in for Lerma as we've seen kind of a rotation recently?
I hope not. I hope it's Lerma and Hughes. Palace have got to do everything to win against Arsenal, and the only way you beat Arsenal is if you play your best side. Now they're already missing Daniel Munoz. You can't be putting in a Doucouré who's off the pace, as far as I'm concerned. I think the starting 11 remains unchanged, barring Munoz, unless obviously Mateta and Eze's injuries mean they can't play, which I'm sure we'll find out over the next couple of days.
So let's talk about the Daniel Munoz situation. He's obviously suspended via picking up two yellow cards for the Carabao Cup game, and also by picking up five yellow cards so far in the season, and will miss Arsenal on Saturday. So he misses both games against Arsenal. We have various players that can play that role. I'd say it's probably between three, being Nathaniel Clyne, a right back by trade, but maybe not a right wing back. We haven't seen him play that role outside of pre-season friendlies. Then there's Ismaila Sarr, who you really don't want to be taking out of that front three, especially not if Eze and Mateta are out of it, but is thought to be capable of playing a wing back kind of role due to his pace and height. And then the shout out of left field, or I guess right field in this case, Caleb Cupora, out of our youth academy, 18 years of age, on the shorter side, but rapid and quite strong. Used to play for the Welling Academy, was featured in the documentary, and is probably the closest thing to a like-for-like replacement in terms of play style that you'll get with Daniel Munoz. Out of those three, who would you expect comes in?
Well, first of all, I just want to say it's quite disappointing to be missing Daniel Munoz for the next two games. But ultimately, when you sign the Colombian Daniel Munoz, he is going to get suspensions. He's shown it at every club he's at. He's shown it at international level that he gets booked a lot and he gets silly red cards. That's what he's about. But Palace took the decision to sign him, and they don't regret that because of the attacking output he gives, and he's a strong player. So yes, disappointed to be missing him, but it's expected at some point in the season that he will serve suspensions. Now, looking at the replacements in the starting 11 for the next couple of games, I think Nathaniel Clyne has been excellent as a makeshift centre half. I don't think he's got the capabilities to play wing back anymore. Personally, it's not his kind of, it's not his, it doesn't suit his strength, shall we say. Ismaila Sarr isn't defensively strong enough to play wing back. You don't want to be taking him out of that front three, as you said, because he's been superb in that role. So yeah, definitely not Ismaila Sarr. For me, it's Kayla Kapura all day long. I think he's good going forwards. He's got a lot of pace about him. He's defensively aware. I know it's not his strongest part of his game, but he can do that. He's obviously a right wing back by trade. He's not a right back, he's a right wing back. And I just think Gasner keeps talking about giving the attack, it's giving the youth a chance. I think Wednesday is the perfect opportunity to give Kayla Kapura that chance and gift him his first start in a Palace shirt.
And on that note, I'll ask you to predict the scoreline of the game on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because you don't know what Arsenal are going to turn up, essentially. You don't know whether Declan Rice will be playing in midfield. You don't know whether Odegaard will be playing. You don't know whether Saka will be playing. It's hard to predict their lineup. You'd expect them to go as strong as they can because they need to win a trophy this season, ultimately. And an EFL Cup is a really good place to get that. So saying that Arsenal are going to be as strong as they can, I still think Palace can beat them. I think they showed enough against City. I think they showed enough against Brighton. They showed enough against Villa in the two games up there, in both in the Cup and the League, to show that they showed enough against Liverpool as well. Yes, it wasn't the finest performance ever, and they lost 1-0, but there were good signs that performance of competing against top teams. So Palace have shown this season that they do really well against the teams in the upper echelons of the Premier League. So I expect Arsenal to be a real similar game to those. And I don't see why Palace can't win, whether that's holding Arsenal as long as they can and winning on penalties or nicking a one goal win. But I do think it'll be a tight game. Corners worry me because Palace have shown weakness defending them this season. So, and they give quite a few away as well. They didn't give many away against Brighton though. So as long as they can keep the amount of corners down, Palace can win that game of football 100%. So I will say on the optimistic front, 3-2 Palace. What do you think the score will be?
I don't believe we'll win it. I just can't believe it. I think it'll probably be a painfully close 1-0 defeat stemming from a Kayla Kapura error, because
Oh
that's,
no.
I associate it with the Brighton game. Joe Whitworth maybe could have saved Solly
Yeah,
March's.
maybe, actually, I'm going to change my 3-2. That sounds stupid. 2-1 Palace.
I mean, in a dream world we come away with a win, but I just can't see it. But I'll say a 1-0 defeat.
I think the important question is, would you rather win on Wednesday or Saturday?
My honest hot take is probably Saturday, because I don't see us winning the Carabao Cup, and I'd much rather get out of the relegation zone, or at least get as far away from it as humanly possible.
You don't see Palace winning the Carabao Cup if they beat Arsenal.
Who's still in it?
Newcastle, Brentford, Southampton, Spurs, Man United, and Liverpool. I think Newcastle, Brentford, Spurs, and Man United, and obviously Southampton, but I don't see them beating Liverpool, are all beatable.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess we got the short straw with Arsenal, and then Liverpool's the.
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather play Brentford or a Newcastle or a Spurs in a semi-final rather than a quarter-final?
I'd say all three of those teams are pretty good big game teams,
Yeah.
whilst we've got no real pedigree or track record. I just can't see us winning a cup, to be honest. It's improbable as a Palace fan, given we've literally never won silverware in English football.
The thing is, they've got a manager who's won top level silverware, and I do think there's the mentality there, there's the talent there, as long as people stay fit,
Well, he's
and especially
undefeated in English Cup competition, so there's that
why
going.
don't we just pointed that one out? And if Palace managed to sign a couple of players in January for the final stage of the competition, I really don't see why they can't get a day out at Wembley. They just need to get past Arsenal on Wednesday.
And then another team as well.
Definitely. Obviously, but I think if they had a couple of players for the semi-final, I don't see why Palace can't go far. Well, they've gone far already, to be fair, but go even further, shall I say?
Fair enough. On that note, I think we'll leave it there. But thank you, Bobby, for coming on the podcast this week. Always great to have you on. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check out the website. Be sure to leave a review on the podcast. That's all from us.